Blog Talk Radio.
You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Hello? Mark. Yeah, Mark, how you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, man, I researched this thing, it looked like it was going to be an hour. Now it was actually 2 hours, and I literally researched it, and that's what it said when I researched it, and I trusted it. And one of the other guests, that's what it said. And then today's show, yeah, as we speak, can you hear me?
Man, he's really not doing well. He's struggling on his answers. I wish I could be screaming in his ear through a PA system. Or, I mean, a earplug system, man. He's really not answering his questions well.
I feel you. And, No, I'm with you. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I know he knows the answers, but he's a guy that stops and thinks about stuff before he answers. You know, I've interacted with him now 3 times, and I know he knows these answers, but he's not, like he just said a couple of things a while ago it's different from what the executive order is. He said, and I know this is little stuff, he said they're going to hire 200 ATF agents. They're going to hire 350. He wants to hire 350, not 200. Well, that's a little thing. That's something that the NRA will just chew him up about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it'll be a mistake. They'll say, oh, he's lying. See, he can't even remember his own lie. I mean, he said a while ago something about registering the gun when you buy it. Well, see, you don't register a gun. There's no law. Nothing in this proposal says you register a gun.
I got you.
You know, they're not allowed. That's what I'm saying. He's ill prepared. I can't believe they let him go out there and not really prepare him better than this. I won't say that on the air. I'm just kind of vocalizing you.
Here it is. I want that on the air. Like you got to understand who you're dealing with. And just so you know, it's actually on the air. And right now, what's happening is because I'm assuming most people are not coming on until after it goes off, even though I've put it out with some confusion. I'm cool with this being recorded. Like the conversation you and I are having right now is very, very important. It's very important. Understanding that you have, I don't have an agenda, and it's the reason why we can't do what we need to do. So what you're being able to give these specifics, that's very good for anybody that listens to this podcast. Like right now, we're just having a conversation. It may be better than what they watch on CNN right now, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, I can answer the questions because I studied this, and I've been a part of the development of it, and I'm sitting here thinking, why didn't they prep him better so that he could answer these questions, knowing that these hard-line gunners are going to come at him hard? Why didn't they prep him better?
Right.
Why is he not, you know, hey, he's the president. He's got a lot to do. Somebody should have prepped him better than this.
Right. I see what you're saying.
He's not getting his message across where he's talking like he's confident. He's rambling for an answer.
Right.
So, I mean, that's not the same guy I saw in the White House a couple of days ago. He knew, he was poised and confident and everything. I think it rattles him when people come at him hard like that. I don't know. I actually feel like I want to just tell him, let me do it. Here, let me help you.
Right. Yeah, right. I respect it, brother. I respect it because you know, even though he's saying the same thing, and this is what confuses me, you know, for someone who is not as well versed as you, I definitely 100% agree that I'm like, dang, these pauses and thinking about it, and look at what we're talking about now. We're talking about the reality of delivering on TV.
For example, let me ask you.
Go ahead. Please.
When that sheriff asked him, "What could you do that's going to stop any of these mass killings with this executive order?" And you know what the answer should be? Nothing. Because somebody intent on killing a bunch of children can do it with a cement mixer, driving it through the schoolhouse if they want to. But here's what I can do. I can't even stop a criminal from going and accessing a gun. But this executive order will stop a law-abiding citizen from selling one.
Yes. And here it is. And that's the reality of the executive order. But because it's missed and not said, then it's going to, the rhetoric that's already out there gets to continue. I see exactly what you're saying.
He could have turned a ground ball into a double play like that, just turned it right around on him and said, "Look, what it'll do, are you a law-abiding citizen? Well, then what it'll do is it'll make it to where that a person like you won't sell him a gun because you don't want to go to jail. And you don't know when you sell that gun if you're selling it to one of these 350 ATF agents that we just hired and then put them undercover to go out there and buy guns for people that are selling them off the street."
Right. I love it.
Yeah, and then here's the other
thing.
If we don't have law against it, we can't prosecute the ones that we catch. So we can't catch them all, but...
That's a huge difference. That's the information you was looking for tonight. He's not delivering any of it.
If we don't have a law against it, how are we going to prosecute him when we do catch him? You know, it's been against the law to commit murder for a long time. But when we catch him, we put him in the penitentiary and or the electric chair or the gas chamber. So it's against the law to commit murder. But see, I'm the kind of person that if I drive up to a stoplight at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's red, I'll wait till it turns green to go through it, not another car out there. You know why?
Right.
Because I'm a law-abiding citizen, and it may not be that I really want to be a law-abiding citizen, so I don't want to get a ticket.
Right.
And I don't know if you know, the police are sitting up there at the Burger King looking at me past the sign while I'm sliding through the stoplight and it's red. But what I'm saying is that laws are designed for law-abiding people, and it will take a person like you, I'm talking like to somebody in the crowd, it'll take a person like you that is a law-abiding citizen that won't go out and buy one from the parking lot at Walgreens.
Right.
Because there's a law.
Right.
And you won't sell your gun to somebody without going through the proper channels because there's a law against it.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. How did you feel about this one? Because he mentioned it, and this is something that I've always felt, too. And so I just want to see, you know, your thoughts on this, someone who, again, is well-versed on this. So when he talked about, just he touched on it, that to a certain extent, that if there is anything that's put in place, that in a sense, when you get into the supply and demand of it, and if there are some restrictions, a little more restrictions that are put into place to where you even would see on the black market things go up in the, you know, the expense of getting some of these, you know, certain weapons and things of that nature. How did you feel about that part? Because I will tell you from my personal standpoint, and this is my thoughts, and of course I want to hear your answer. I've always said that to a certain extent, if there is a lower supply per se, you would get some of that effect where it becomes so expensive. Not that any criminal wouldn't get those guns, but there would be some criminals who could not just due to the market, the idea of supply and demand. He mentioned it. He brushed over it. I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
That's exactly correct. If there's less of them available in the market, the price of them goes up. Now, here's what happens right now. They'll come down from New Jersey or New York to a place like Virginia where you don't even have to ask a person their name to sell them a gun legally. And they'll buy 14, 15, 30 guns, and if it's a $400 gun, advertised on armslist.com, they'll buy it for $400. Then they'll take a whole suitcase full of them and go to a hotel in New York and roll that same suitcase that looks like they're carrying their blue jeans and their underwear in it into a hotel room and set up shop and sell those same guns they just bought for $300 or $400 a piece for $1,500 or $2,000 a piece. Now, if you cut off the supply, where that they've got to get their guns and their supply off the black market, if you cut off the supply, then you don't have, then you've got a different situation. The guns are not readily available like they are now. So supply and demand always causes everything to be in greater demand, and greater demand causes it to go up. So if guys like me don't sell the guns, look at this for a second, Montoya. Let's address that even from this perspective.
Okay.
Every single firearm that is in the hands of a criminal right now started off when it left the factory and it came in a box to a dealer somewhere, or when it came off that assembly line, it was a legal gun.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere between there and that criminal's hand or that insane person's hand, it fell through a crack somewhere. And most of the time, that's where an individual has sold that gun to somebody else who maybe didn't sell it directly to the criminal, but sold it to the other guy, to the other guy, to the other guy. And you see, we think because we see it on TV that you can run the serial number, trace it back to an owner, but there is no national registry of firearms. You can only trace it back to the original distributor. If you're lucky, you can trace it back to the distributor that sold it to what store, but then you can't track it to the owner because they're not supposed to keep those records. You might get lucky enough if somebody bought it on a layaway or something like that to go through it, but you can't just trace a gun by running the serial number. There's no national register.
Go ahead.
When you see that on TV or in a movie, that's not true. That's not real.
Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot of sense because, like, again, you're talking about, like you said, movie and TV. So, unfortunately, what gets into the culture is this failed assumption that is not even close to true. But, and as you speak about it, which, again, in the government or President Obama, whoever, at this point, they're clearly not asking for even a national registry, which not even something that you're asking for and would tramp on the Second Amendment, right? Well, that becomes close to, and
right.
Even he spoke to this during, it comes close to that fear that the government would then eventually try to move to, taking away our guns. And so,
all right, do you know what the Second
go ahead, go please,
right?
Please.
Do you know what it says, the Second Amendment? It says that we have the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's what it says. Now, that requires interpretation for the 21st century. But the real hard right, gun enthusiasts say, no, those founding fathers, this is what they meant. And they'll argue about punctuation placement. They'll argue about everything like that. And so then what we do is you just say, okay, let's take your argument, for example, and say that we're not allowed to interpret that one, not one word. It is exactly the way they meant it in the 1700s when that was written. You with me?
I'm my follower. Go ahead.
Where in the Constitution does it give me the right to buy and sell guns? It says I have the right to keep them and bear them. Where does it say I have the right to buy and sell one?
Nowhere at all.
Buying and the selling of one, that couldn't be a constitutional infringement, could it?
That was not in the Constitution at all. You're absolutely right. It makes that's an amazing point.
How could it be a constitutional infringement if there's nothing written in there that says buy and sell? Why doesn't it say that the right of the people to buy, sell, keep, and bear arms? Why does it just say right to keep and bear? Oh, okay, so then we do have to interpret for the 21st century. Now that we've established that, we just have to figure out where the line of interpretation lies.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. If you will, Mark, hold on 1 second. I want to get my other guest on. Hello, Shelly.
Hey, what's up, Montoya?
Hey, what's going on, brother? Okay, so what we're doing, obviously you kind of were correct about how that thing timed out, so I don't know if it messed people up, but what you're right now, I wanted to, I don't know if you've heard in the past, but I have Brother Mark Carmen on. He's actually the, I don't know if you'll ever see the promotion for the show, but he's the founder of the American Coalition of Responsible Gun Owners, and you kind of hear he and I having a conversation. So what I'm doing right now, because it looks like, to be sincere with you, maybe because of the mistiming that I promoted it with, it looks like it's just the three of us, but this is being recorded. And so I'm just right now just trying to have an incredibly intelligent conversation about today's discussion. You know, we may just do this for about an hour, which I think is fine, but I think and I've always loved this. I love having intelligent conversations about whatever subject. I think they work very well, and so this will be about a one-hour podcast. I don't mind whoever hears it, you know, hears that we're literally just on, you know, on this podcast talking about this discussion. So, you know, just letting you know that's what you jumped into, Mark. Like I said, again, that's his background. Did you get a chance to possibly see his video that went viral some time back that actually kind of moved him, in my opinion, to the forefront of this dialogue? And I say that personally for this reason. We both know that this is an extreme divide when it comes to this discussion of, you know, gun control, or as Mark preferred to say, gun legislation per se. But either way, we know that there's a huge divide, and people typically are not crossing, you know, whether it be party lines or just personal feelings about this situation. And so his video that just based on what matter of fact, Mark, if you will, hello, you know, so I'm basically just kind of introducing y'all, not really doing, in a sense, the show per se, but this podcast I know will be very effective for anybody that chooses to listen to it. But either way, Mark, I just want to introduce you to my man, Shelly Winters, who's, you will definitely get his views on this, and like I say, I'm going to kind of move our conversation along into some other areas, but right now, and this is one other thing I'll say to you, Mark also opened, as he actually stood with the president just last week when he offered the executive orders and felt good about the things that President Obama was offering in those executive orders. I do want to offer this just so that you can give your 3 cents on this, but he felt like Obama did very bad in the Guns in America town hall meeting. So I do want to give you that additional information too, because I'm pretty sure you have some inputs about what you just saw as well. So I think that'll be a good place to start. Again, introduce you, you know, just say hello to each other and tell you how did you feel, and we'll come back to where me and Mark were at. How did you feel about how Obama did in the town hall meeting? You know, what are your thoughts about that? Again, hello to each other. And yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Mark, happy new year. It's a pleasure to meet you.
New year, my friend.
Yeah, it was stagecraft. At its best. I don't think it impressed the people who want, you know, these problems fixed. And I don't think there's anybody out there that does not want these problems fixed. I think Mia Love said something. The congresswoman from Utah said something before the event started. And, you know, she said something that I agree with, is that there's nobody out there that does not want to not see kids killed in first grade, or not see young African-Americans shot dead in Chicago selling lemonade. There's nobody alive that doesn't want to see these things. The question becomes, are you moving in the right direction to stop these things? And is an executive, totally agree with background checks. I don't necessarily agree with a doctor being able to let the government know that I sat down and talked to him and I was mad at my wife and, you know, I was, you know, upset and severely depressed for a week because my wife and I had an argument. I'm not comfortable with that. I don't know if this executive order calls for that specifically, but it could. And so there are things that, you know, I just are a little concerned about, but I don't think there's anybody. I was listening to Mark talk about people have the right to sell guns. I don't think if I'm selling a gun, I should be allowed to sell my gun to my neighbor if he wants to buy it. I think there's a problem when I go to a gun store, buy 50 guns, put them in my trunk, and drive to Chicago to sell them. That's a problem, and I agree with him on that because there's no reason for me to be doing that except to make money and then not knowing who I'm selling them to. So I think there's some common sense things we can do, and I just don't think that this particular town hall was the place that the that was effective. I just think it was too much stagecraft. I don't know. That's just my personal feeling.
So ill-prepared, and I want to address what he's talking about the mental health thing. For example, I've been involved back in October or late October and through November and December in putting some of this and getting, you know, opinion and so forth. Here's what the mental health aspect of this particular executive order is going to cover and how they're going to do it. You have a HIPAA violation if it starts talking about where a doctor is giving information about a person's mental health or their physical health. That's a HIPAA violation. Can't do that. But here's the workaround. If a person is receiving Social Security benefits for an intellectual disability, that makes them ineligible to buy a firearm under this executive order. That's all. So it's not a medical issue. It's just a it cleared or it didn't clear. That's it. So for example, a person who is born intellectually disabled has never been before a court to be adjudicated intellectually disabled or incapacitated. That's just been presumed, and the Social Security Department accepts the word of the doctors that have been involved in this person's care when they become a legal age and they receive Social Security benefits for disability based on intellectual disability.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead, Sean.
How many of the, and I don't know the answer to this, so I'm not saying this is a debate. I'm just asking a question. How many of the mass shooters who we know are mentally incapable, mentally disabled, were collecting Social Security from the government, and how many of them became crazy over time, let's say?
Well,
and would that have stopped those particular men?
Nope. And I've on CNN interviews I've done, the BBC interviews, they asked me that same question, and they asked the president that question tonight, and the answer should have been no. Because if somebody wanted to kill those children, they could have gone and got a shotgun with a 12-gauge. They wouldn't have had to have an AR-15. That 12-gauge shotgun with double-op buckshot. They could have driven a cement mixer in there. They could have put a pipe bomb in there. They could have done all kinds of things. People are going to kill people. But what it will do is if there is a law in place, it will stop a guy like me from selling one to somebody. And it will if they have to have a background check to buy a gun, it will stop me from selling them to a total stranger. That's one thing. The other thing is that it will stop a gun store from selling one to somebody. And now listen to what I'm saying. Under the current way it sits, the standard for which a person is declared ineligible based on mental ability or inability, the standard is the same standard that says they're incompetent to stand trial. All right, now, so that means that a court has to adjudicate them. That's the words used in the ATF or in the Brady Bill. They have to be adjudicated mentally incompetent. So just the fact that you've had an argument with your wife or something doesn't rise to that standard. So that in mind this, that there are only about 11 states that even report that in the whole country. So you're not getting that. But now here's the kicker. So a person that is, well, I don't like to use mentally retarded. The term you use today is intellectually disabled. But so if a person goes in and is what we used to call mentally retarded, goes in and buys a gun or to buy a gun, and that gun dealer says, I think this guy's retarded. I can't sell him a gun. He may as well say, I'm not going to sell him a gun because he's black.
Right.
I'm not going to sell him a gun because I'm not going to sell this person a gun because it's a woman. I'm not sure this person's a citizen, so I'm not going to sell him a gun. You don't have that. And so that's the problem. there's nothing in there that would keep that person from passing a background check.
Let me ask you this.
Okay, sure.
No. I was going to ask the gun dealer that spoke tonight at the town hall. Hold on. Yeah, the gun dealer that spoke tonight at the town hall, he mentioned the fact that the gun dealers turn people away every day and mm-hmm. And that they work with law enforcement. What did you I heard you say bull. I mean, can you talk a little bit more?
If they run that background check and it clears that background check and that person has been intellectually disabled all their life and has taken heavy medications and so forth, and keep in mind what we have right now, like the state of Virginia and most states around this country, they have closed the mental institutions. So those folks are now living out in the public. Here's how I know that. I have one that lives with me. I have a 62-year-old man that I essentially adopted 5 years ago because his mother and father can't take care of him. And you would never know that he was intellectually disabled until he's late in the evening when his medicine's worn off and he starts talking to Jimi Hendrix or somebody. You follow me?
I do.
And so he can legally go and buy a gun, and that gun dealer, if they run that background check and they don't sell him a gun, they're violating his right to buy a gun, and they're discriminating against him if he passes the background check. Now, if the gun dealer just says, I don't think I'm going to sell you a gun, they have a right to refuse service. But my point is that, like for example, as I was telling Montoya before, I believe you got on the line, if there's a law in place, it allows me to prosecute if I'm the prosecutor, if I catch somebody in violation of the law. If I don't have a law, I can't prosecute.
Right. Well, let me ask
and
you
I think
this
that's
thing.
The smartest thing. Let me stand in. And just to, yeah, you asked a question, but I just want to say that part, what he just said, is the smartest thing in this entire dialogue that goes completely missed because of the rhetoric that we, you know, kind of just get into our corners when it comes to this discussion, is that if the law's in place, you know, whatever, and you know, everybody makes the argument, well, it's not going to stop somebody who's trying to break the law or whatever. But as he just said, well, if there is a law that makes sense and if we're smart about it, well, we can set up some type of prosecution. But go ahead, Shelley, go ahead with your question.
Well, what I was going to ask about that is that in cities like Chicago who have strict gun control laws, there are still record numbers of deaths every year due to gun violence.
Yep. Yeah.
So doesn't that bear out the prosecutor? I mean, people get locked up every day for gun possession in a city like New York. I mean, the most high profile case, Plaxico Burress, carries a gun into a club and gets locked up for gun possession, not because the gun went off, but for possession. So the gun laws exist. Are you saying that prosecutors, we should create more gun laws, or you're saying that the background checks that are not sufficient enough should be strengthened?
There's no single answer, but let me go here. Have you seen what the executive order actually covers?
I don't. I have not. I totally admit to this that I have not.
There are five elements, and I believe from listening to you talk, you're a gun owner, as am I. You probably have a concealed weapon permit. I do. Believe in the right to keep and bear arms, but there has to be some regulation with it. So let me just say this. There are five essential elements to this executive order, and I'll articulate what they are. One of the biggest things that I hear from my fellow gun owners is we've got over 20,000 laws right now across the country about firearms, and why don't we enforce those before we start making more laws?
And I think that is I think that's the sensible argument coming from gun owners. And I'm taking out the rhetoric. I'm throwing out the crazy rhetoric. I'm throwing out, much like Obama did today, which I do agree with. There is the craziness to some of these arguments. I think that's a sensible argument.
All right, so let's go there, and let's go to item one in the executive order, is that going to hire 350 additional ATF agents.
Now, he said,
He says 200 and he misspoke. It's 300.
No, I'm saying, but the guy, and this is not, I'm not arguing with you so much as clarifying what I heard tonight was that, hey, Mama Kim, good night. All right. Excuse me for that. The dealer association guy had said that there were going to be auditors tracking the sales and making sure that if I sell you my gun, I've done a background check on you. That's what he said. He asked the question, why can't they be ATF agents? You're saying that the executive order does specify ATF agents.
350 additional ATF agents.
But he was saying they're going to be auditors mostly. Is that not
true? The language in it says 350 alcohol, tobacco, firearms agents.
Farm agents. Okay.
All right. And the president, he misspoke, and when they asked him the question, when he was talking about it, he said 200, but they're hiring 200 processors to process the additional background forms to
streamline the system. That's what this guy was talking about.
Right.
Gotcha.
They're going to hire 200 processors to process the background checks and so forth like that, and it's going to be open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, holidays, 365 days a year, which, like right now, that's not the case. But it'll be open, it'll be open 7 days a week. Now, here's another thing. The current system for running the background check is 1990s technology. The government will partner with a whole brand new system to make the system more effective and slicker and nicer and more and quicker and more accurate. Now, the system is only accurate to the point of the information that's being put in it. So the states need to put the information in it. Now, the federal government cannot legally mandate states to do a whole lot. But what they can do is incentivize them with money and say, if you will meet these standards, we'll give you money to help facilitate. So they've set aside $300 million to do that.
Do you think that's enough?
Well, it's not. It's almost a half a billion dollars. But $300 million is a pretty good hunk. It's better than $3 million, and it's better than nothing.
Right, like, okay.
ATF levels of agents are the same as they were in 1972. So they're going to add 350 agents. That's what the order will call for, is 350 agents and 200 additional personnel process background checks. Now, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, okay. Now with the increase in background checks, with the increase of this executive order that allows for more background checks, which I don't think many people would argue with, does that growth of government, and I hate to use that term, but that growth does that start to infringe, or can that start to infringe upon the Constitution that you mentioned that gives me the right to bear arms? Will that eventually move into a place or a space that will infringe upon my right to bear arms, or can it?
When it goes into an infringement, that's when the movement loses me. We have a right to keep and bear arms in this country, and I believe in that Second Amendment as much as I believe in the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment and the 18th Amendment and all the other amendments. But I don't believe that it would be causing an infringement. And I look at it like this, Shelley, from this perspective. If I lay a set of car keys down on the table, and beside it I lay a loaded pistol, and you and I walk out of the room, and they're in that room by themselves on that table, neither one of them are dangerous any more than the other, right? But when somebody walks in that room, depending on who picks up what, they're equally as dangerous, are they not?
Yeah.
Why would we not be considering? Go ahead. Why would we not consider having similar regulation for the gun as we do for the car keys?
Because, and I'll say this, and I think there's a difference, because in the case of the car, unless I take the car keys, get in the car, and drive it into a group of people maliciously, and I drive into a group of people, the car is different than the gun. If I pick up the car keys, drive out the garage, and drive down the street and hit somebody by accident, it's far different than if I pick up the gun, put the gun in my pocket, walk out the door, and the gun goes off and kills somebody. It's equally an accident.
What if a three-year-old picks up the gun?
Well, if a three-year-old picks up the gun, the three-year-old can pick up the gun and cause an accident, which would be totally an accident, but the three-year-old can't pick up the car keys and drive the car. So you can't equate them.
But a blind person could.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
What I'm saying is that I'm looking at this from a logical perspective and saying this.
Right.
As a responsible gun owner, I'm not going to let my grandchild have access to my gun. But I also have to back up and say that I got my first shotgun. I still had training wheels on my bicycle. And by the time I was 12 years old, I had the complete care, custody, and control of that shotgun. And all I'd have to do is tell my mom on Friday night, I'm going hunting in the morning, and I'd leave the house at 4 o'clock in the morning with a shotgun and meet up with my buddies and wouldn't be home till noon.
But then, so when you talk about responsible gun ownership, isn't the key word not necessarily, or key words, not necessarily gun ownership, but the responsible part of it? In other words, if I'm a criminal, gun ownership and responsibility are not tied together. But if I'm, what I'm saying is, how do I keep my rights, protect myself, and all at the same time have to worry about the government in an effort, and I think a goodwill effort, wanting to protect citizens, which is its primary function, to protect the citizenry. Let me jump in real quick.
Because I love their interaction, and I'm fine with it. That's why I'm not jumping in a lot. But Mark, I know you have an answer for him, so you can still give your answer. Here's a quick perspective that I would like to throw in this scenario, because your concern, if I'm hearing you correctly, Shelley, is, you know, even in whether it be just offering the more ATF agents, when you say, well, will they, you know, in the growing of that government, you know, ultimately, you know, you're talking about your concern is in the anticipation of some type of infringement. I understand that.
It's not
Let me make sure I understood. Maybe I misunderstood something. Right. But you did say, you know, could it lead to some type of infringement? You did say could it. So I'm using could it to equal anticipation. So maybe, I mean, that's why I said, you know, you said could it. I'm just responding that you said that in the anticipation, could it. You asked Mark, could it? So that's what I mean by you're worried about in anticipation of.
I'm really –
okay, go ahead.
Could it, meaning in a affirmative sense, could it, because, you know, take race out of it, as a man in America, I've seen what government intends to do, what it starts to do, and how it goes.
So again, you're still talking about anticipation. You are. You're switching it to affirmative, but you're basically about to break down how what it tends to do, and then it leads to something else. So again, that's an anticipation that it will lead to something else. So here's my question. Let me just kind of get to the point I want to make before Mark even, you know, answers your question. So as we speak, based on the executive order, which I do want Mark to get all 5 points out so that it is on this podcast, so I do want to make that clear. But as the executive order as written, and your concern is the next step, but as it is written, it is a smart legislation or a smart executive order as written. When you or anyone else speaks to, well, what the government will do, whether there will be an infringement, what I do believe that if those steps are taken, I think that would, what I'm saying is those steps would be clear. Because right now, the as it speaks, the executive order doesn't speak to an infringement as the Constitution is written as we speak. When you say you agree with, you know, backgrounds, or if you say, well, we're going to obviously, if we're going to add 350 agents, of course, I understand the concept of we don't want to grow the government. I understand that conservatives don't want to grow the government. I'm not necessarily advocating for it. But what I am saying is that alone does not lead to the infringement. And if there are steps taken by the government to infringe, Mark just said himself, he would be the first to step up and say, I'm not going for that. And my point being is, when that legislation or if that larger ATF group were to take the step that people are so-called worried about, which is, oh, well, now we need to do a legislation to take guns, let's deal with that at that time, because you're worried about that day may come. I'm saying that they may not come. And the one thing that Obama did good on the town hall meeting, which I do agree with y'all, he wasn't very effective whatsoever. But one thing he did say, if we're going to hamstring every decision based on what might happen, then there's no decisions we could ever make in the government, right or wrong, conservative or liberal. And that's kind of the basis of your anticipation. You try to change it to affirmative, but that's an anticipation of what the government would or might could do.
Well, I guess I'm basing it on history. It's not, I mean, you could say, I guess it's semantics at this point, anticipation, what it could be, what I'm saying. The fact of the matter is I'm looking at history, and I'm saying 300, Mark said there are over, I think he said 29,000, I think there was the number, gun laws on the books currently. So now we have five executive orders, the first of which he delineated, which was about hiring 200 basically auditors to process background checks 365 days a year, every single day. Well, if Hillary wins and she adds another $300 million to the budget and adds another 500 processors, at what point, and this is the question to responsible gun ownership, at what point does that start to become an infringement? Congress.
But what's the infringement that you're concerned about? Let me ask that real quick. What's the concern? And then, Mark, you can have it. What's the infringement you are concerned? What is the infringement?
What point do those background agents? I'll give you an example. Let me give you a perfect example. I worked as Mark or anybody's been to a gun show. I worked a political campaign several years ago. A doctor running for Congress in the 13th district here in Georgia, and we did about four gun shows. Working that campaign, we bought a booth. Her campaign was right there, and I worked these gun booths. And it was the first time I'd ever been to a gun show. And I stood across from our booth was across from a dealer who had about six or seven tables, long tables filled with rifles, pistols, everything you could think of. And I watched over a three-day period, white guys walk up to the booth and get a gun, buy a rifle, walk away, exchange money, get a receipt, and walk away. I saw a handful of young black men walk up to that booth and get a background check done and be told, come back with this receipt in 3 days and you'll get your gun. At what point, now you
Great
said
point.
This was set, this show was black and white. At what
it
point
is. We're
those background
it. Absolutely.
Agents, right. At what point do those background checks, those auditors, who right now are 300, who could grow mm-hmm. from there, at what point do those guys start to take a different criteria on people's background checks? At what point does a felony record keep you from getting a gun, but then it grows to you got a speeding ticket or you got a DUI or you got fired from your – I mean, at what point do you start to make that slide? And I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying
right.
History tells me that it will happen because I've seen it happen before.
Right.
And
here's the beauty of what you're saying. Well, the beauty of what you're saying, and Mark, you can have it right after this. The beauty of what you're saying right now, Shelley, is do you understand that what I asked you allowed you to explain the details of what sounded like a generalization that wasn't clear. Like what you just said spoke directly to me as an African American. Mark, please speak to what Shelley just responded. I think that is a fair question when I understand it in detail, because generalized, I challenged you, that makes sense to me. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Anybody who doesn't acknowledge that racism is alive and well in this country is either blind or ignorant. Racism is something that is, it is a plague on our society, and we're probably another two generations away from it being close to resolved. And it's unfortunate, but again, that already is illegal. Now, enforcing that, you know, it's like anything else. You know, when I was a police officer, for example, it was against the law for me to search a vehicle without a warrant unless I had consent. So what we would do is we'd just tow the vehicle and impound it and search the vehicle or inventory the contents of the vehicle. So we weren't searching anything. We were just doing an inventory and basically violating the law. We were violating the law against unlawful search and seizure by using any excuse we could impound the vehicle. And, of course, we had to inventory the contents when we impounded it. Oops. We had to switch. So you follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
right.
That's been addressed. That has been addressed because that was a constitutional infringement. But I was actually taught that way as a young man back in the late 1970s and early 80s. That's how you get around having to go get a warrant. So anybody that doesn't believe, and quite frankly, the part of town I worked in was predominantly African American. And so it was just an excuse to be able to search a guy's car for drugs if we wanted to. And it's wrong. It's wrong. And for people to do that, I understand your fear. You know, and as a white man, I don't know what it's like to be persecuted just because of the color of my skin. But I do have a home in Asia, and I speak Filipino, and I understand the language, and I know what they say, and they don't know that I'm listening. So I understand prejudice. I understand.
So I guess that because I understand.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Let's go back to the gun issue, for example. The first thing we have to understand as far as bloating government any further is even this particular executive order, the Congress will have to approve the funding for it. President don't have the ability to write the check. Some of it he can do out of discretionary funds, and I think he's got enough in the payroll and in discretionary fund to add agents and to add the auditors. But the $300 million, I'm certain he doesn't have that without Congress authorizing it. And that money would be there to incentivize the states to help them put in systems to help streamline their processes. Here's what we have to understand, and I don't know, Shelley, how much of this you know where this came from, because I'm surprised a lot of times when I find out how many people think that the law that is in their state is the federal law. But let me back you up a little bit. Are you familiar with D.C. versus Heller?
Who? D.C.?
D.C.
The case.
Washington, D.C. versus Heller.
That was the recent I think the recent case that kind of made it harder to carry a weapon in D.C.,
It's the opposite. Let me tell you what
it makes it easier. Okay.
The Firearms Control Act of 1975 was put in place, and it was passed by Congress, and that's when it was illegal in Chicago, New York, and Washington, D.C. to own a handgun if you were a civilian. You remember in New York, you couldn't own a handgun.
Right.
You couldn't own a handgun in D.C. Well, this particular individual, Heller, was an African-American auxiliary police officer. This man was only considered a policeman when he was on duty, and so the city wouldn't let him take his firearm home with him. He felt like as a police officer, he needed to have his firearm with him when he was home. So he sued, and the city sued him. And it got all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled in this, what they did was, they threw out the Firearms Control Act of 1975 in a 5-4 decision and said that it was unconstitutional, and then we didn't have a Firearms Control Act anymore. And they threw it out because of the thing that said a handgun is no different from a long gun, so people have the right to own guns. And then in that opinion, the Supreme Court ruled that the states need to put these laws in place, and these are guidelines, but the states will have to do it because the federal government can't do it and the Supreme Court can't write law. So what's happened is, what else? That was in 2008. So what else happened in 2008?
The downturn of the stock market, I don't know if it's related or at all.
No. Listen,
first thing that comes to mind. Okay, I'm sorry.
Listen, here's the Southern Baptist boy going to tell you what happened.
Okay.
The colored man became president. You get what I'm saying? I'm being very facetious on purpose.
Okay.
They were bound and determined not to let anything go through that this man tried to do. And since 2008, and I didn't vote for him twice, guys, since 2008, this man's not been able to get hardly anything through Congress. They've stonewalled him 6 ways from Sunday. So since the man's been president, you've not had a Firearms Control Act in place at the federal level. That's why you got these idiots dressing up in camo and walking into Walmart carrying a rifle. When I was a cop, if a guy went into Walmart carrying a rifle and somebody called from Walmart, we'd go lock him up. Now he has a constitutional right to do it because it was declared unconstitutional when they threw out the Firearms Control Act. There's no law that says it can't do it until they get some in place. And see, everybody thinks these laws that we grew up with are still in place, and they're not. The Firearms Control Act was thrown out in 2008.
So that being said, so let's use that as an example. And so now you're allowed to carry and you go into Walmart. A case happened in Ohio, which is a open carry state.
Yep.
3 months or maybe about a month after Michael Brown got killed, a little known case, I think the case that, in my opinion, should have been the case if you want to talk about a police brutality issue, this should have been the case that was targeted, not the Mike Brown case, but a young man in Walmart with a toy gun on the phone with his girlfriend or baby's mother. Ladies calls a cop, or someone calls a cop, says there's a man in here with a gun. Now we're in an open carry state. He's got a gun that he picked, a toy gun that he picked off the shelf of Walmart and was walking to the register with while he's on the phone. Cops run into Walmart, guns drawn, and kill him inside of Walmart. And not only that, one of the little-known pieces to the story that doesn't get much publicity is the fact that a lady was so scared she was running out of the store when she heard the gunfire and died of a heart attack. Obviously, no prosecution of the cops that shot the young man inside of a store carrying a toy gun. Forget that, a toy gun they sold in the store in an open carry state. But no one's even been prosecuted for the lady's heart attack. The point I'm trying to make here is that we have moved these gun laws forward, say what you will, responsible, not responsible, irresponsible, whatever. But the fact remains, this was a case of a guy carrying a toy gun. So to your point about these guys being allowed to carry guns and AK-47s into stores and all this kind of stuff, my fear as a black man in America, my fear is that when you start to take away the guns, there's no fair treatment for my ownership of a weapon. Because it's clear to me that at some point I need to own a weapon, not so much for the two cops running up in a Walmart, but for the guy carrying an AK in Walmart, like you said. So how do I protect my constitutional right to protect myself? Forget the right to bear arms, but just to protect myself and my family. How do I keep that while at the same time having responsible laws, quote unquote laws, that would keep the guns from killing, you know, keep guns out of the bad people's hands, if you will. That's my concern.
We're segueing away to something that is all, it's going to be the second part of what I'm doing in 2016, called One Hat, One Handshake at a Time, where I'm going to be addressing some of these racial issues from the wrong from the complete wrong side of what people would think I would be, being considered a conservative white guy from the South and talking about racial inequality. But I'm carrying this banner as hard as I can, so let's try to keep from segueing and stay on the guns. But I'm hearing you, man.
Marwin, I would like to segue into it if at all possible, because
because
the concern is, and I'm with Shelley in this situation, you know, because of their unfortunately the racial issue that it applies to our justice system and the laws in themselves. So because there is such a difference. I think if I'm hearing Shelley correctly, he's saying, well, I'm just kind of, we're trying to figure this thing out and talk about it right and talk about it sincerely. So what if I'm hearing Shelley correctly, he's saying, well, if we're not putting things in place, at a minimum, it gives me a chance in a legal system and a justice system that, as the laws are written, clearly show don't apply to me, because the young man he's talking about with the Walmart case is Jamal Crawford. He was actually leaning on the gun when the cops yelled and told him to drop the gun. He was looking up from the phone call and shot before he could even realize they're saying put the weapon down. And so I think all Shelley is saying, if I'm hearing him correctly, is, well, if there's going to be infringements, those infringements are going to be more for us, just like you gave that example of the blacks being turned away at the gun show, saying, "Well, you need to get your background checked." So if I'm hearing you correctly, the fear is, well, if we put things in place, it's going to apply to us more, and as African Americans, feeling like we're in a country in which we're not protected, we're going to have less protection. I'm hearing. Go ahead. Yeah, let's go there.
Let's go there and let's look at, first of all, Shelley, the way that I say it is I'm carrying a gun. That's what I do. But I carry it concealed. I don't open carry and challenge people. And that comes back from my police days when we weren't allowed to carry open unless we were in uniform or on duty. And that was because we were always told that if you're carrying open and people see your gun, you're the first guy getting shot. So
right.
We didn't.
And I agree with that. I'd rather you not know what I have.
Let's go right where you are talking about it, this racial issue with guns, and let's look at these idiots out in Oregon. Now, if those guys weren't dressed up in cowboy hats and camo and walk around white as I am, and if they looked more like you guys, how long do you think they'd let them stand out there and occupy a federal building with guns? They'd already be dead. Let's just tell the truth. I mean, let's just tell the truth. Let's don't back up. Let's tell the damn truth. I'm sorry.
I think it's a shame. I understand your concern,
and I thank you for reminding me, Shelley, because, you see, I'm not a black man, and so I don't think that way, and I need to start thinking that way, because it doesn't occur to me that I might be discriminated against when I go to buy a firearm if everybody's got to have a background check. And then everybody else, I'm the only one who has to get one because I'm the wrong color. That's just not right. I don't know how to fix that. That's a systemic problem in our society. And the way it's going to get fixed is for guys like you and me to talk about it. So we have got to stop it. I don't know how to say it any plainer than that.
Well, I think two things. Forget about the militia thing, because I have a different reasoning beyond the race reason why they're not firing on them. But, and it's more to do with history. But I just, my thing with, I agree with sensible gun laws. I agree with what you're saying. I'm just saying that my concern is, where does the government go too far? And that's just what my general feeling is that there has been a history of overreach by the government when it sets out to do something positive. You know, welfare, it set out to do something positive for a group of people, and it just went too far. And it, and 40 years later, you see 3-4 generations of white and black poor people still on welfare. So I think there's a good intention, but good intentions always some or not always, but sometimes don't work. You know,
yeah.
And
they had
unintentional consequences.
Here's what I'm saying is we don't have a crystal ball to look into the future, and I'm going to use a very controversial individual here for a minute. And I believe this. Everybody's got their own opinions about George W. Bush, but I don't think even George W. Bush knew the day that he got in office that 9 months later somebody was going to drive an airplane through a tower and we were going to be in the situation when we were with a financial crisis and all that stuff. That's a whole different subject. What I'm saying is we can't look into the future, but what we can do is look at now and say that we have got 21,000, it wasn't 29, it's 21,000 is what I'm told, and I haven't checked that and counted them myself, but 21 is the number I hear thrown around, different laws. Really, essentially, it's a handful of laws, but it's 21,000 different laws because of different jurisdictions. And the issue is there's nothing at the federal level that defines what it is because we don't have a Firearms Control Act anymore to kind of lead the path on that. So it's all over the place, and people don't even really know what the law is. But you're exactly right. There is that propensity of the government to overreach and to take things to the extreme. What happens if Hillary gets there and says, well, 350 wasn't enough, we need 500, so now we need another $300 million, and on and on and on and on and on. Here's what I say this. I say this right here, that if we can get more agents, we need them because they're way understaffed. If we can pay for it, that's a good thing. If we can get more people to process background checks and make the system smoother for a person like me, like I don't have a better problem going down to Dick's Sporting Goods or going down to Bob's Gun Shop and buying a gun past the background check. I don't have a problem with that. But the problem is that, you know, there is that propensity for government to overreach, for people to apply the laws discriminate
randomly,
where they discriminate and they decide which ones they're going to apply and which one they're not going to apply, and you know, what is the answer to that? What is the answer? I don't even know.
You believe no? Gotcha.
I mean, I don't know. I think that there is that propensity for government to overreach, but I know that this particular executive order, I've read the text on it, and I've read the talking points, and I'd be happy to give them to you if you want them. I just need to get your email offline, and I'll send them to you, the fact sheet from the White House. It's got the White House heading on it, because I got it before it was ever released, you know, because I was at the meetings and all that stuff. But there is nothing in that I can see that would bother a gun owner if you look at the way it's written, as Montoya was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you try to think, well, what could this turn out to be at some point, then you get on the treadmill, the what-if scenario, and gosh, it could what-if your way right into anything.
Fair point.
Here's what I rely upon. The fact that in order to facilitate an infringement, a constitutional, like in other words, to unwind the Second Amendment, the process that would take makes it so far-fetched to believe that could ever happen in our lifetimes, we need to worry more about getting invaded from outer space. Because the process to unwind an amendment is so vast, and you probably know what that is,
yeah.
But maybe some of our listeners don't. But by the time you get somebody that is politically suicidal enough to bring such a bill, you know, to sponsor such a bill, and then they got to get it through committee. And once it's clear, it's got to get brought to the floor by the Speaker of the House. And then the House has to vote on it and have a 66, has to have a two-thirds majority. And then that same process has to go through the Senate. And then that has to be sent out to the states to be ratified by 3/4 of the states. And just to give you a reference point, the Equal Rights Amendment giving women the equal rights to men was sponsored in 1933, and it's still not through there yet.
That's true. Well, it's great talking to you, Montoya. I appreciate the time, but I've got to go.
No, respect Mark, you, brother. Like,
yeah, it's a pleasure meeting
ahead,
you, Mark. I hope to talk
peace
to you again.
And love
to Montoya, Montoya has my email address.
Okay, I'll get it. Brother, just remember this. It takes the black keys and the white keys on the piano to play the Star Spangled
Absolutely. Absolutely. God bless that statement. God bless you.
All right, pal.
Hey, thanks very much, sir. Hey, Mark, thank you for the time that you've given. And again, what I will be doing at this point, you know, some other things we might have could have got into or whatever, but I hope you agree that this was just an intelligent conversation that,
man,
you know, hopefully,
I'd love to just sit down and have a cup of coffee and a cheeseburger with old Shelley. Sounds like a super intelligent guy, and that's what we call civil discourse. That's not argument.
Absolutely.
That's called
Absolutely.
Civil discourse. That's called
right.
seeking solutions.
Absolutely, and that's why I bring him on the show quite often.
If we could get our politicians to do that, wouldn't it be grand if we could get our elected officials to just have a conversation and hear each other talk?
Hey, it would be beautiful, man. From what I understand, and this is just a tad bit to give you, you know, before I let you go, because I know I'm taking a lot of your time, but this is just something to think about when you ask that question. From what I understand, I was on an airplane with some friends who had one of their friends had got elected to the Senate for the first time. This was about 3 years ago, and based on I'm going by what they told me, having researched this, but this was pretty unique. You know, sounded like pretty first hand information from their friend who they were, you know, obviously still friends with, and he literally was going to Congress the first day. Ended up going to Congress with another fellow senator who was their friend was a Republican. The fellow senator was a Democrat, and so they're both going on the plane the same day to the White House for the first day together as rookie senators, and literally, you know, just kind of you know made a friendship on their way there, and so they go into their sessions separately, and so when they come out of their sessions or whatever, they see each other and they literally just. You know, cordially having just met each other, kind of go and say, hey, you know, how's it going? And literally they were reprimanded for even having that interaction. And what I was told by these people, like I say, this is secondhand information, I haven't researched this, but was told that our elected officials, based on party lines, they even have separate bathrooms. According to this family. And so when you asked that question, it reminded me of that, and I wanted to share that with you because at the end of the day, if you can't even go into the same bathroom, if that is in fact true, we're never going to have this type of discourse that would effectively improve our country, and we get caught up in rhetoric and no solution. So again, I appreciate you for being someone based on this issue that obviously you're very passionate about and speak incredibly intelligent to and are trying to, in a sense, create the solution. I respect you even in this conversation saying, you know what, in moving forward and trying to get this thing corrected and come up with solutions, you know, you sincerely say it. I don't know what the answer is when you start getting into the very discriminatory practices that you said and we both know absolutely exist in this country. But I just appreciate you for the discourse. I thank you very much. One tidbit just for you, because I know you, as I've gotten to know you, I know how sincere you are. I will tell you one thing that you want to refrain from using from now on, and just like I said, this is just man to man and to do on the podcast, is you don't want to say colored anymore. We don't.
No,
want
I
that's something
it on
that
purpose.
Is that. Yeah, you were being facetious. Yeah, you were being facetious. That's
I
right.
Did
you
did
say
purpose.
That. And I respect
I
it.
It.
And I respect
purpose.
It because you did it on purpose.
Oh, I wouldn't.
I forgot
I
about that.
I don't use that. But I did it on
absolutely.
Purpose. That's what I said.
To prove a point. Yeah, you did say that. You're absolutely right.
The white boy from the South, the colored man.
And yep, you're absolutely right.
When I said it.
Yep, that's right. You
that's
did say that.
Saying.
So that's fair to you. That's very fair
so
to you. You did
that
say
term.
That.
I do not use that term.
Yeah.
But that's
and I never heard you say it before, but like you said, you were doing it intentional, and I respect it for effect, and that's how we got to talk. We got to have these conversations, and I just believe that this podcast can be very effective because we both agree that what happened on TV today wasn't enough. And like you said, you wish you could answer the questions. And so as best we can, you know, you tell your people, hey, listen to this conversation I had with Montoya and Shelly. I think it's worth for you to listen to, and I'm going to pump up this podcast and whatever track, you know, whatever traction it can get. And, it's, you know I mean this sincerely. I don't care anything about, you know, mental dialogue when it comes to that. We just needed this conversation, and we're still trying to figure it out. And it's sad that what happened today on national TV, it leaves us in the very same place because of, like you said, the information is there. The president wasn't prepared, and so people will walk away from that dialogue in the exact same place, and that does not help us.
I thought he was going to use it. I thought he would use this, and it would be an opportunity for him to sell this to the people. And and what he really did was he unsold it. He made it worse, I think. And
that's something. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have such great admiration and respect for him. I really do. And so when I say that, I'm saying it to him in love and saying, man, how did you go out there so unprepared? How did you do that?
Right.
You know?
And
I think it's just that he tries to think of the correct answer instead of just going with his gut, because he's a really smart man. He's really a good and decent and honorable guy. And I think he just doesn't do well in those open dialogues. He never has. He just doesn't do well in that.
I respect that, and I just think that what you're saying now, like I said, I was so glad that, you know, when we were first talking, you didn't even know we were live. This is the conversation that needs to be had, because what happens is by you saying that, people can cipher through and say, well, let me hear what the executive order actually says. Like, I think that's what will happen as people hear this thing, and even if they agree or disagree with you, We've done a good job tonight, man, and I just appreciate you. And if you ever feel the need, if there's something, some way I can help you, or you say, Montoya, let's do this together, or if you know some other people, as you move along with this further, because I know you're going to keep being involved and they're going to keep asking you, if there's other people that we should do this and get it saved, or whether it's 30 minutes, an hour, whatever the case, if you ever see that they can effectively help with what you're doing, I'm on your side as far as it comes to that. My goal is to always create honest and true dialogue, and I think we did that tonight. So I appreciate you so much tonight, Mark.
Well, keep me in mind for later in the year, you know, when you have a segment, because I'm really going after the racial issue.
I'm really going to go after
racial discrimination.
Hey, I love it. And if you
it's
ever catch,
be,
you know, catch
and,
wind
and
of
and
mm-hmm.
just like I learned from this gun thing that all of these moms against gun violence and every town and all that, they mean well, but they get dismissed because they're women that don't know anything about guns. And until a person who is that looks and talks like I do gets on the bandwagon and say, this racism has got to stop, and it's going to start with me. And I might not be able to change my neighbor, but I can damn sure change me.
I respect it.
And until we get to that point where people that look and talk like me can get with people that look and talk like you and just have a big time and watch a movie and laugh and have a ball game and fist bump each other and argue over what's the best team and we love each other like God said we're supposed to do, we're going to keep having these problems.
And I appreciate you at the end of the day for owning them. In our position, we know it's there. We feel like we spend a big time fighting those who tell us it's not there. And I've come to know in my time in this arena that a lot of times that's not sincere. So I definitely appreciate you, you know, for saying what you're saying and whoever sees it that way, let's get on those keys and sing the Star Spangled Banner, brother. So appreciate you so much tonight, and I definitely will keep you in mind and look forward to, you know, having you on in the future on the show. So thank you very much.
God bless you, pal. I'll be on CNN on Saturday at 12:15 CNN, 12:15 Eastern time.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just be coming off the show, so I'll try to get it turned on in the barbershop after we finish the show.
All right, man. I'll see you.
All right. Appreciate you more.
Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
All right. You've been tuned in to basically what I would call a round table with the Mental Dialogue. I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. I hope anybody that has a concern about this issue, I hope you've heard a lot of smart conversation tonight. With that said, all I ask is that you think.